Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Cult of Gracie Radio, broadcasting on XXBN via the Blog Talk Radio Network, or switchboard, I should say. XXBN is a media project based in Raleigh, North Carolina, but Cult of Gracie with host Gracie Bissett, me. And we're sitting here in Fargo, North Dakota. Now that we've got the business out of the way tonight, I'd like to introduce our a special guest. I'm calling her a special guest because I'm thrilled. I just met her, gosh, about a month ago, I'm guessing. She's known on the internet as Mad Kane, and her real name is Madeline Begun Kane. And she is, I met her through, Carnival of the Liberals a few weeks back, and she's a political blogger is how I bumped into her by that hat, and discovered a charming little post about politics and current events that was all done in little poetry and found more delightful political limericks. Who could not like that? And then discovered a lot more about the lady. So I'm going to bring her on now. So welcome to the show, Madeline.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm just so excited. I feel like a kid in a candy store. I'm fascinated by politics. It's something that I blab about a lot, but I tend to be the traditional, you know, opinionated, ranting, foaming at the mouth, so upset I can't stand it, you know, kind of a blogger. And then I read other people who are the methodical, point by point, through every speech, analyzing, going, you know. And then there's you, who so far stands out as, you know, not the lone cheese in a stinky bad way, but in the good way that, you know, I mean, you go there and you put these things out, whether they're in song parodies or limericks, these poems and these little verses about what's going on. And even if you don't, I can imagine, even if you don't have the same political leanings and agree, you can't help but smile and admire the wit and the ability to put them together. So I'm thrilled because it's not something I could do.
Well, you obviously haven't been reading my hate mail. Not everybody likes it. Although the more unpopular Bush gets, the more popular I get. So years ago, when I started writing about Bush and the Republicans, I used to get a tremendous amount of hate mail. And after 9/11, you can just imagine.
How dare I
poke fun of the president? But now, when virtually everybody dislikes him, even Republicans, it's gotten a little easier.
Well, but it takes a different set of skill and a different way of looking at something. Instead of just sitting down and writing, I don't like this. This makes me upset, and here's why. To taking the time and being very clever and witty and composing something that, you know, would be funny if it were about anybody else, in a way. You know what I mean? It sort of takes the personal out of it, makes it more enjoyable to read, in a way. At the same time, it's that much more scathing and memorable for me. But it's just a really different thing. What made you decide to write that way?
It was kind of thrust upon me. I mean, I've been writing humor for maybe 15 years, maybe more. But when I first started out writing humor, it wasn't about politics. I would write marriage humor or computer humor or legal humor, because I'm also a lawyer, or, you know, technology humor, money humor. And I would basically write about things that drove me nuts. It might be something that my husband did, some adventure we had that I would turn into a humorous essay, or it might be some incident with a bank or whatever it was. An annoying boss would inspire a humor piece. So I've been writing humor for a long time, but not about politics. And what happened, when Bush took office, I kind of freaked out. And I said, how am I going to survive the next 4 years? Little did I know that it's going to be a lot more than 4 years. And at that point, I was still—I really wasn't writing about politics, except once in a long while. And I remember a couple of days before he was inaugurated, and I was just freaking out. And I remember I was in the shower where I get most of my best inspirations, and all of a sudden it hit me, the way to survive his administration. I would do a fake diary of Bush. And I immediately, without stopping to dry myself off, ran over to the computer and started writing W's Daily Diary, which I launched, you know, about 7.5 years ago. And that was my real beginning of writing political humor. It wasn't actually, at that point, I was not doing poetry at all. So I started writing 3, 4, 5, 6 times a week, fake diary entries, and basically trying to get inside his head, but be amusing about it, and hook, and it was obviously fictitious, but I was hooking it onto actual events in the news. So I was trying to be informative, satirical, at the same time. And I did that for you know quite some time, and actually I got a bunch of awards for it. That's kind of when I first got noticed for my political humor writing. Then I guess I have a short attention span, because I keep changing careers, and when I'm writing, I keep changing the type of stuff I write. So I kind of, you know, said I can't keep doing diaries. I got to do other stuff, and I all of a sudden started writing song parodies, which kind of came naturally to me, because my first career before I was a lawyer was as a musician. And all of a sudden, when I would hear a news story or just a phrase in the news, I would somehow connect the phrase to a musical phrase. I would hear a melody, and the hardest part was actually trying to remember what song it was, because I'd say this would really work well. I could write fake lyrics to this song if I could only figure out what song it is. And I finally track down the song, find the original lyrics, change them, and write political song parodies. So I started doing that for a while, and the next thing I know, all of a sudden I was writing limericks and haiku. I don't know. It's basically, I have a warped brain. What can I tell you? I've been monopolizing the conversation. That's probably about a 10-minute answer to a 5-word question. But basically, my brain does not work normally, as you can tell. Just I think in verse or song or whatever.
Well, but I hope you're not saying that in a bad way. I mean, it may not be normal, but it certainly is. You know, what makes you interesting? What makes the blog interesting? I mean, if I have to read one more, I'm sorry I didn't post because my cat threw up. I'm going to hang myself.
Oh, I do try to avoid those. Although I did write one or two limericks about cats, but it was a humorous limerick about a horrible experience I had. I'm very, very allergic to cats. And I had a rehearsal in a composer's house, and the person did not warn us that she was a cat breeder. And I had a major, major attack. And I lasted about 3 minutes into the rehearsal. I was sick for the next week. So sometimes cats can be inspiring poetry as well.
Just not for the reason that most people think.
No, that's probably true. That's probably true, yes. But,
so you've been blogging a really long time, because like internet years is different than like, you know, it's like dog years or whatever. It's like, you know, being on the internet blogging for 7-8 years is like, you know, 100 years in real people time or something. So
I was pretty early. That's true.
And you know, so I'm a little embarrassed to say I'm just finding out about you this year, but the internet is a big place, and while you may not have been hiding, I just apparently wasn't putting in the right words.
Well, I am highly insulted that I was that obscure that you didn't know that. No, I'm just kidding. But and listen, there's so much good stuff on the net. I'm sure there's tons of stuff that I would enjoy if I knew about it. It's hard to keep up. I have so many favorite blogs, and so many favorite websites, and yet all of a sudden I realize I haven't been to such and such a site or blog in a month. And I'll say,
yeah,
I love it, but there's just, you know, if I read everything I want to read and that I like and that's valuable, then I will never, ever get any work done at all. So
I know. I do the same thing where I go, okay, now today I'm going to, or this week I'm going to go and visit all of my friends' blogs. You know, and that's like all you can do is try to keep up with your friends. And then like the next week you're like, okay, now this week I'm going to pay attention to my favorites, you know, in this area, or I haven't been here for a while. But, I mean, every week I can't read everything. It's just, there's too much.
It's impossible. And, the net is growing so quickly that it's overwhelming. And then you'll read something, and they'll click, they'll link on something else, and you'll click on that. And next thing you know, it's Ellen, later, and you're in the sinkhole, and you've been having a really good time, and you're a lot more informed than you were 5 hours ago, but you haven't done actual work.
I know. So, I always tell people, just because you don't hear from me that day, I didn't email you, or I didn't, you know, post a comment or whatever, it doesn't mean I was offline. It just means I was, you know, following the link, going to the next thing, you know, reading like a theme,
like
an encyclopedia reading or something.
The net is not good for people with ADD.
Well, actually, I think it's very good for us. otherwise, we'd have to stay in the lines. It would be very difficult.
Right. But it's so tempting.
One of the things I asked if you would read a few things tonight, and one of the things that you just read recently, which is, I would say it's a subject near and dear to my heart, but it's more like a dagger in my heart. The whole Republican vice presidential VP candidate. Yeah.
What a nightmare.
Here's
Sarah
Paulin, right?
Here
we are, two women with vaginas, and we apparently are not fooled by the Trojan horse of a, you know, candidate with vagina being thrown at us. We're not jumping up and down and saying hooray.
Well, and Hillary, Sarah, same thing, right? Yeah, we're all women, all the same.
Yeah, well, and the amazing thing is, too, if we talk about it, we get accused of being not feminist or anti-supportive to the women's movement by not being happy with a female candidate. I think, to be fair, to be a feminist, to be equal about things, is to say, I don't like this candidate because, so we're going to talk about her. But before we get into too much about her, I would love it if you would read Sarah Who for us.
Oh, I'd be happy to. Let me just find it here. Okay, here it is. It's a three limerick poem with an intro, and I'll read the intro to set up the poem. It's called Sarah Who. Sarah Palin Verveep? I knew John McCain and his Rovian puppet masters were cynical, but this takes the cake. But hey, I'm a female, so I guess I have to vote for what's-her-name, right? After all, the only reason I was backing Hillary is because we're both female. So naturally, now that Obama's chosen Biden as his running mate, I must vote for a woman who stands for everything I despise. And now here's the actual poem. Dear Johnny, I cannot conceive what could possibly make you believe that your anti-choice pick could possibly click with us Hillary gals. How naive. You must think that we women are sheep who would swoon at a female for Veep. But a right-wing nut gal who'd control our canal? Oh, that hole that you're digging is deep. Yes, your pick has a beautiful face, and she'll help you to shore up your base. But she's wrong to the core, and like you, she's just more of Bush Cheney with feminine grace.
Yay.
Thank you.
If I could probably write a poem, I mean, I went to grade school, I had to write a poem, but I've never been able to master satire. I watched Stephen Colbert, I read some of your posts, and I go, I don't know how people do that. Where you take, this poem right here wasn't necessarily satirical, but it reminds me of, you know, I just want to come out with both my fists in the boxing gloves and start swinging. I can't go into the character that way. It's just too personal and too hard for me. So I really admire the skill to take the passion and put it into a character and a voice.
Oh, thank you. I guess I have to channel the anger somehow, and that's somehow how it works for me. It's just, I mean, I can write serious stuff. I mean, I worked as a lawyer for a dozen years, so I obviously had to be serious. But this is a lot more fun, I've got to tell you.
And what is the reaction like to you know, when you posted your Sarah Who, and then you did a faux Sarah diary entry? Well, what is the response like at your blog? Are readers angry with you? Are they laughing? Are they debating?
These particular ones, I I have not gotten any negative response to these. I mean, there are times that I write stuff where I get more debating. I'm trying to think of an example where I've gotten some debating. As I say, I don't get too much negative anymore because Republicans don't tend to read me, you know. Most people that read don't actually comment, but if they comment, the comments have been positive. But I'll give you an example of when I get more debating. I was a big Hillary supporter. And obviously, I'm supporting Obama now. I mean, we obviously have to have a Democratic president.
Amen, sister.
But I was very strongly for Hillary, and I was never a big Obama fan. You know, obviously, he's a zillion times better than McCain, and I'm supporting him now. But during the period where a nominee hadn't been chosen yet, I would write stuff critical of Obama. And then there'd be debating. I mean, there'd be a lot, and I'd write about sexism because I felt there was a lot of sexism in the media coverage of Hillary.
Do you really think so? Because, you know, people keep telling me there wasn't, and it drives me crazy.
Absolutely. There was plenty of sexism.
Did they discuss McCain's suit and whether it showed him off to be a masculine enough male or too masculine? Did he show enough,
What about the thing about her? What about the crying? The crying nonsense.
God. And if she didn't cry, she was a robot monster. And if she did cry, she was playing the feminine card.
She could not win. She could not win. And if anyone intimated that there was any sexism, she was whining. In fact, Sarah Palin actually accused her of whining several months ago. Did you catch that quote? She referred to her as a whiner.
Yeah, well, it's amazing to me because the things that were discussed about with Hillary weren't discussed with, you know, throughout history of male candidates. They haven't been mentioned. We don't worry about what he's wearing and if he looks too much like a man or not enough like a man. But, you know, did she show too much cleavage? Was it a feminine color? Was it a masculine color? We don't do that to men. But this whole notion of you know, I too was a huge Hillary fan. I don't dislike Barack. I wish he would have waited 4 or 8 years. When he first came on the scene, I was like, this is the guy to watch. I was enthusiastic about him. But I wanted him to have a little more experience. And I wanted to know a little bit more about him through that experience. And Hillary just had so many more things, including answers to things. She had platforms with you know, outline of how she was going to get there instead of just rhetoric. And even her materials when I went to the caucus to do the voting kind of stuff, you know, materials they had. Hillary had, you know, bullet point outline plans of what she was going to do. Barack just appeared in blue with hope and we can change things. And that was it. That was literally the only text on there other than, you know, he approved this message. And I was, you know, picked him apart for that. But like you said, there's no choice between him and McCain.
Of course, absolutely, absolutely. But when I was writing stuff that was kind of favorable to Hillary and critical of him, or critical of the media coverage of the campaign as they treated her, there I got plenty of negative. You know, it was a big mix. As a matter of fact, there were some bloggers, and I won't name any names, but there were some bloggers who I used to read routinely that I thought were excellent that were so nasty in their coverage of Hillary that they're actually off my blog roll. I don't read them anymore. Quite a few of the major male bloggers are just off my list now, and they were just unbelievably sexist in their coverage of Hillary.
And I think a lot of, you know, I don't know if we were reading the same people or not, but I found myself surprised, not expecting those people who normally got it, in quotes,
exactly,
to not see what they were doing.
Because we were allied with these people, and we thought that they, you know, they're supposed to be liberals, and liberals are supposed to be feminists, but, you know, I'm not saying all guys, because a lot of the guys are just great, and I'm still reading them, but there's some very powerful male bloggers that were absolutely atrocious in their treatment of Hillary Clinton, and they're just off. They're so off my list. I can't tell you.
Well, and I tried talking to a few. I don't, like I said, I'm not going to name names either, and I don't know that they're the same individuals. But I tried talking to a few of them, you know, through email, saying, "Are you aware that when you make this point, when you bring up this argument, that what you're doing is not feminist? It's misogynistic. You're making this about gender, and it's an inappropriate conversation." And they were like, "What?"
Very defensive.
Well, and they just didn't see it. And I thought, wow, this is one of those cases where it's so part of our culture and so accepted that people don't even see when they're doing it. You know, and then, of course, as a feminist, I'm not funny. I can't take a joke, and I'm always rabid because I'm always seeing it.
You know, women aren't. You know, women have no sense of humor. You know that, right? How many times have you said that?
I love your blog. I always send people. I send people to your blog when they accuse me of that. I go, here's one who does.
Women have no sense of humor. I'm telling you. You know how many times I've read that? But so I said to them, well, that's funny because people pay me to be funny. So obviously, one, this woman does.
Just one. You must have. You know, that must be that odd thing you were talking about. You're the only funny feminist, right?
Apparently, that's it, just me. But I'll give you an example of the media bias. Do you recall the incident when this was back in April, when Hillary was talking about healthcare issues, and she was talking about a woman who was pregnant and ended up dying because the hospital didn't treat her because she had owed money to that hospital, so she ended up having to go a longer distance to a different hospital to get treatment, and she ended up dying. Do you recall that story?
No, I don't. But now I'm getting mad.
this was the story. Anyway, what happened was some hospital said that person did not die under her care, and all the press were on Hillary saying she failed to fact check and da 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 da, and everyone was making fun of her for screwing up. Well, it turns out that the people that didn't do the fact checking were the press, because the hospital that denied this story was not the hospital the woman had died at. So they had been the original hospital that she'd owed money to, so she ended up going to a different hospital, and because of the delay in going there, because she couldn't get treatment.
Of course she didn't die there. She died. She died because she had to go somewhere else.
Exactly. But the point was, is that as soon as, somebody said that Hillary's wrong, all the media, they were gleefully talking about her screw-up, and she's telling these stories, and they're not true, and she doesn't fact-check, and it just was everywhere. It was everywhere. And it comes out like a day later that she was right on, she was absolutely accurate, but nobody heard about that. So I actually wrote a limerick about the situation, about the press, if you'd like to hear that.
I would love to hear it.
Okay. And the title was Biased Journalists and Bloggers Heal Themselves. In coverage quite sloppy at best, the press attacked Hillary with zest, disputing her facts, but 'twas they who were lax, because if Clinton says east, they say west. That's it. Just a quickie.
A quickie. You know, and see, I guess that's what killed me personally, is that I'm not known for my brevity, so I would have, like, stanza after stanza after stanza. It's more like, I can't think of, I hate this when you can't remember something that you just had on the tip of your tongue. Where they're making the pilgrimage and you meet all the characters on the way. It's one of those classics you read in high school and then in a college. It's driving me crazy. It'll come up to me about 5 minutes and I'll blurt it out. I will use this thinking time to say that everybody is listening to Cult of Gracie Radio with my guest Madeline Begun Kane, also known as Mad Kane, and we are broadcasting on XXBN via the Blog Talk Radio Network. XXBN broadcasts from Raleigh, North Carolina, but the Cult of Gracie Radio show broadcasts from Fargo, North Dakota. If you'd like to join the conversation tonight, it's simple to do while we are broadcasting. All you have to do is call in at 646-200-3136. Again, that's 646-200-3136. Go ahead, Madeline.
Now I was just saying nobody wants to talk to me. Apparently, I'm so hurt.
This is not abnormal. We have lots of shows where people don't call in. I'm checking the chat room. Also, I should make the usual announcement that I am able to read and monitor the chat room, but I'm unable to comment there. But if you're phone phobic and you still have a question or something you'd like us to discuss, you can type it into the chat room and I will read it on air if it's appropriate. Gotta throw that disclaimer in because you never know. Someone types the alphabet and I'm not reading it. I still can't think of that. Was it Chancery Tales?
I didn't hear what you said.
Chancery Tales, isn't that it?
Oh, God.
It's like a book, but it's a poem.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. That's very close to the title. I don't think that's exactly right, but I know exactly what you're talking about. And I could never read through that. Impossible.
Well,
impossible to read.
And that's what I would write if I were to do poetry on politics. I'd end up with this big tome that no one would read. So this is why I don't do it and you do.
Well, it's funny, when as a lawyer, you know, lawyers tend to write things called briefs that are anything but. But since then, I've turned into a minimalist. In fact, I told my husband the other day that my goal is to write a one-word poem.
Excellent.
And my life will be complete.
What kind of law did you practice?
Oh, God, just about everything, actually. I worked for a general practice law firm for about 8 years where I did just about every type of civil law, contracts and real estate. And what drove me out of that was matrimonial. I did not want to be a shrink, which you kind of have to be if you're handling matrimonial cases. And then I got a job as assistant counsel with a large corporation, and I did everything a corporation might be, you know, contracts and acquiring, you know, doing deals, acquiring other companies. And so I did everything, pretty much everything but tax and criminal. And it made me nuts. And
yeah, we had an attorney on XXBN, oh, gosh, I want to say it was just this early summer. Barry Goldstein. I can't remember exactly, Goldstein. Anyway, we can look it up in the archives. But he was talking about what goes on in family court, with domestic violence and batterers getting children.
What a nightmare. That's a nightmare.
Deeply upsetting to me. But one of the things he mentioned is that almost every state has done their own, by their own choice, to look into gender bias in courts. And the majority of them found through their own committees, their own, you know, no third party looking at this, they came up with the decision that the majority of them do have huge gender bias. And yet, no one's really doing anything about it. And this sort of thing drives me crazy. And I was just wondering, as a lawyer, if you ran into any sort of obvious stupidity about such things.
Well, I got into the law when there weren't too many women lawyers. I got out of law school in 79. And the first law firm I worked for had been around for about 60 years, and I was the first woman they hired. And I'll never forget this. I was near the top of my class when I graduated, and I could not get a job. I mean, it was impossible. I mean, you know, all the guys had jobs and the women were not getting jobs. But I finally get this job, and it wasn't even a particularly great job, but I was thrilled to have anything. And I'll never forget this. The first day I go to court, and it's in Brooklyn, New York, and it's in a building which is filled with law firms. And I swear to God, the next youngest lawyer in this building is probably like a 60-year-old male. And there I am in my late 20s. And I remember talking to some man in the elevator, and he said, what was I doing then? I said, I was a new lawyer for such and such a firm. And he says, oh, you're the one. I said, what do you mean, I'm the one? He says, the partners from that law firm were considering you for a job, and they said that you were both qualified, but they were very nervous about hiring a woman, so they were asking all the other lawyers in the building whether they thought it was safe to hire a woman lawyer. Is that insane? This is back in 1979.
Yeah, and I think that mentality still exists. I mean, I know as feminists, they tell you that you're crazy and that you're looking for things and you're seeing what you want to see and you're looking for the worst. But I don't think the people that don't believe, and they're not just men, and they're not all men, but these people that refuse to see this, I don't think they understand is that once you see these things, once you have these experiences, that you go crazy. You know, it's crazy making. It's emperor's clothes time. You're supposed to pretend that never happened.
That's absolutely true. I mean, I was actually in court one day, and the judge referred to me as Portia. Because after all, the only other female lawyer was a Shakespearean character, so naturally I was Portia. I mean, it's bizarre. I mean, it's very strange. I mean, look, it's much better than it was. And but the glass
ceiling,
we're
talking,
there's still a glass ceiling, as Hillary certainly knows.
Yeah.
At least in the Democratic Party, there certainly is. I'm not sure about the Republican Party.
I mean, we don't have the ERA. What you experienced was 1979, not 1879. I mean, this isn't some ancient history lesson. This is, you know, occurred in your lifetime, in my lifetime. It's happening now, maybe to a smaller degree, but the fact that it's happening, you know, isn't right with me.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, it's very, very interesting. Years and years ago, I wrote a personal essay about my experiences working as a lyawyer in subtle sex discrimination. So, you know, that's the little things, you know. See, when did I write this? I'm trying to sit down and write it, but it was something like 20 years ago. It was a long, long, long time ago. And it was basically a serious personal essay with a little bit of humor. And it was, you know, it was published way, 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 way long ago. And all of a sudden, about a year ago or so, I get contacted by a book publisher. They want to include this now 20-year-old essay or so in a college textbook on gender issues. Yep, on sexual politics and the gender gap. Now this is, in fact, it's in. I'm looking at the book now. I just pulled it off my shelf. It's actually two books because they have a larger book and then a companion book. It's called The Contemporary Reader and then Readings for Today, and it's essays on different social issues. And I'm the actual lead essay in this book on gender issues, in this section on gender issues. And here, I mean, if this were still not currently a problem, then why would a 20-year-old essay be selected for a book like that? Is that scary? And I actually thought the piece was kind of obsolete by now because it was not on the big things. It was about, you know, subtle sex discrimination, and it's now still being read, and they're having serious after the essay they actually have essay questions to write essays about my essay, which completely strikes me as strangely bizarre, especially since I'm a
writer. Can you find some real quick? I'd love to hear the questions. Just like a couple of them.
Well, hold on. Let me see. Let's see. Hold on a second. Let's see. I just closed the damn thing. Let me see. Open it again.
I'm sorry.
Well,
if I had known.
Wait, hold on one second. Now, is it in this? It's funny. I opened naturally to it. You know, it's a shame. One of the books is, like, in terrible shape because the mailman decided to leave the package in the rain. So the book, I had to dry out the book for several days before I could even open it. Okay, here we go. All right. So is this book, there are critical thinking questions that follow the essay. Okay. I'm just going to read it before rereading it. Let's see. Do we, all right, here, number one. Do we have certain ingrained gender expectations when it comes to job positions? For example, do we expect men to be mechanics or lawyers or firefighters and women to be teachers and nurses or secretaries? Are these expectations changing or are they still common assumptions? And here's number two. Kane opens her essay with a story about how she was called Portia by a judge. Who is Portia? Why is Kane uncomfortable with what she believes to be a compliment by the judge? Explain. You want to hear another one? There are a couple more.
I think it's fascinating because it's been a while since I've been in college and had to write any essays. And when I was going, they were, the women's studies was sort of still a newish, maybe not completely legitimate sort of area of study.
Right.
So I'm fascinated.
Yeah, but I mean, it's strange to think that this stuff is being just, it's still a big issue. But I'll read you one more question, and then we can move on. But anyway, let's see. Okay, in paragraph 5 and 6, Kane describes a business meeting in which a man apologizes to a woman for his offensive language. Why does she object to such apologies? What assumptions do the men make in offering such an apology? But it's true. I mean, and I think I say, I don't have the essay right, I said something like, that's okay, what do? Say, that's okay, I swear like a sailor? I mean, what do you do when you're in a serious meeting and somebody apologizes for swearing? I mean, you're supposed to be equals, and yet that automatically implies that you're a lesser person because they have to apologize for you because you're so weak and timid and stuff that you can't handle someone swearing in front of you.
Yeah. Well, this is the sort of thing, I mean, I'm going to have to remember this conversation the next time someone tells me this is just, me not letting old history, go. Because it is, if, like you said, if this wasn't happening, would there be a new textbook being put out on the subject? It's not like they're teaching from a 1960s manual. They just published this because it's needed.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what I find is very often I run into females in their 20s that fresh out of college, and they really haven't experienced sexism, or at least not that they've noticed. I mean, maybe it was so subtle they didn't notice it, and they're just kind of entering the workplace. And very often they'll say, I'm not a feminist, like feminist is a bad thing, because they don't even know what it means to be a feminist. They don't understand the need for it, and they think any problems that ever existed are long gone.
Well, and I see, as a former sex worker and working in areas of sexuality, I see the opposite. I see the 20-something who maybe hasn't seen this light or didn't really care about it because it didn't affect them yet, because being insulted at 19 maybe didn't affect their career or whatever. But they go the opposite direction where what they call sex-positive feminism, where they think that they can, have anonymous sex whenever they want and there's no emotional attachment or consequences and, in some cases, responsibility for that, and think that that is liberation and inequality. And they think that that's what the women's movement brought them.
Right.
That disconnect from, to them it wasn't in their lifetime. It seems like an over and done thing because so many, media and textbooks discuss this women's movement as if it existed only in this time frame and that it doesn't exist anymore because it wasn't needed. And they have this, they don't understand what women went through. They can't imagine being in a courtroom and going, having that elevator conversation. It's so far removed from them.
Exactly.
And they think because they're out there being able to, they're more worried about that they can play the life of a, quote, slut, unquote, because that's what feminism brought them. And it's like they're missing so many of the other issues involved.
I'm wondering if anyone was educated by what happened to Hillary, the way she was treated by the press, the way she was, I'm just wondering if there's a new awareness of sexism among the younger women that haven't experienced it so much. I hope so. I hope it had the value of being somewhat educational, if nothing else.
You hope there's some positiveness out of it. I don't know. We talked before about so much to read on the internet, and you tend to try to keep up with, as you can. And I do know, I don't know if you know Amber Ray. She's an excellent feminist blogger. She's younger than I am, so they're all kids if they're younger than I am. And I'm 45. I don't believe she has children, so I'm putting her in the, mid-20s sort of thing. I don't know if that's at all accurate. And I know that there's lots of women around that age that I hear from that get it, that see it, that raise their voices and saying, this is horrible, this needs to stop, don't need the rest of you see this. But I don't know, for every, you know, one or two of those type women that I see, I run into other ones that just don't get it. And that's why I don't say this is just about men not getting it, because it's women that don't see it either. I've actually heard from other women who were older than myself or my age. I'm 45, almost 45. And these women older than myself who should know more than even I do, because they were older and able to have more of the conversations than just listen to them at a table, saying that they thought pollen being on the ticket was a good thing. Yeah. That it was an acknowledgement from the Republican Party that at least women existed as a voting body, and so that token was some move forward.
Oh boy!
Now they weren't going to vote. They weren't going to vote for it. I mean, they weren't. They weren't.
It's an absolute insult to say to think that women will just vote for a woman who stands for everything that hurts women. I mean, what an insult! Just automatically, you're a woman, so you're going to vote for a woman. It doesn't matter what she stands for. I can't think of anything more insulting than that.
But there are women that you know, I don't hang out with them for obvious reasons. I've been barred from their homes. that when Sarah Palin says, I'd make an excellent vice president because I'm a woman and women are automatically in the role to support men. Well, I don't know how that makes her a governor or whatever, because, you know, I don't know, who are you supporting there? But,
right.
You know, people, a lot of women nodded their heads to that. Now, if you personally believe that, I guess I can't argue with you with your personal philosophies.
Right.
But if you're going to say that, you're going to stand up in front of the world and say this is what the role for all women are, is to be second, to be supportive, to be behind every, you know, great man is a good woman. I can't imagine that, you know, that's what you want the statement on women to be. But women are saying, I like it.
There's no doubt there are a lot of women being suckered. That's absolutely true. But the thing that's even more cynical is not that some women would fall for it, because I know some women will fall for it, but to think that people that support Hillary would fall for it.
I
can't believe that anyone who was going to vote for Hillary would vote for her, because anyone who's you know, going to vote for Hillary, most of them are doing it because of the issues. And I can't imagine there's a single issue that Sarah Palin and Hillary Clinton agree on. I just can't imagine that.
I believe they both sit to urinate, but I'm not sure on that.
That's
about it.
I can't believe how serious we've gotten. If somebody turns on, they're going to say, she's supposed to be funny. I don't think she's funny.
No, but I guess that's the point, is that you're an intelligent political blogger, but that you put this into a manner of way that's, you know, I don't want to say it's easier to read and make it sound like it's written for, you know, grade school children, but it's so refreshing to read what you write, as opposed to this, you know, another keep scrolling down the page, line by line.
Right.
Argument or defense of some candidate's speech. And we need those bloggers, and I'm not knocking them. But what I'm saying is, it's so refreshing to come up to yours and have this satire or a limerick or something that puts a twist on it that makes it just sort of snap into place. And like I said, I can quote, you know, your limerick to somebody else on the street. I have a really hard time, you know, quoting from Huffington Post in a pithy manner at the grocery store line. You know, it's hard.
If you can quote from me, you're better than I am, because my husband will say, what did you write today? I said, I wrote a limerick. He said, well, what was it? I said, you expect me to write to remember something I wrote 5 minutes ago? I can read it, but I write it down, it's out of my brain. Is that scary? Obviously, I'm getting old, but I never had a particularly good memory, and now it's gone. It's just gone. So I can't recite anything I've written unless it's in front of me.
Well, I'm just glad you write it.
But, you know, it's nice to be able to inform and hopefully entertain at the same time. You know, that's certainly my goal. If someone can laugh and yet get a little of information at the same time, or get a different angle on a viewpoint, maybe even change somebody's mind while entertaining them, you know, I'd like to think I do that sometimes. I'm certainly trying to do that.
You know, and that whole changing someone's mind thing, I mean, you know, the Republicans do not have a snowball's chance in hell of converting me to their platform, their agenda, and to vote for their ticket. I mean, it's not going to happen. Just like I'm not going to go over and get Sarah Palin to come over and vote, you know, for the Democrats and their ticket, even if she wasn't on the ticket. She, you know,
there
her ideology
are,
is different.
But there probably are some people in the middle that are persuadable, I hope.
Well, or at least, you know, that, you know, people, it's real fashionable these days to say you're an independent. And I think we're all independent thinkers, regardless of, you know, I consider myself an independent thinker, but the Democrats tend to usually be my party in my lifetime. That doesn't mean that I'm incapable of change or that I've signed some document that prevents me from changing. But I think there are lots of people in the middle that don't have such easily defined black and white issues. A friend of my mother's, who's been a friend of my mother's for, I don't know, 60 years or something like that, is actually my godmother. And she's very Christian. I'm just going to call her Barb just for the sake of niceness. And Barb is very Christian, and she, about 8 years ago, she was not very happy with George Bush. And when he came up for his reelection, she was very unhappy with him. And she made a comment to my mother about that. My mother said, well, that's why we all have the right to vote now. You don't have to vote for him. And she said, those of us who believe in pro-life, there is no choice. Oh. He has to be my candidate. And I was thinking, and I said, how, in one sense, it must be very nice and liberating from rage to be able to be that simplistic about your worldview, to have everything boiled down to one simple ideology point and ignore everything else. Because I go to bed and I wake up in the morning lots of times angry and frustrated, you know? I can imagine that you do too from time to time, where you go, what is going on? And
every
to be
day.
Able to be
pretty much every
yeah.
day.
But can you imagine how freer you would be if you could just pick one issue, make it that black and white?
Oh yes.
And then just make every decision every day. And, you know, we're probably not going to get through to those people, but there's a bunch of other people in the middle that maybe haven't fixated on anything yet and can't separate. You know, so maybe your blogs and other people that are out there blogging can help them start to pick and choose issues for themselves and, you know, start to slowly separate what stands out as important to them.
No, I sure hope so. But I know what I know what you mean about single issue people. I mean, I'm Jewish, but I don't make my decision based on purely on who I think is going to be best for Israel. I want to make the decision on who's best for this country. And I figure any president we have is going to be good for Israel. And there are lots of other issues to worry about. But I do have some relatives that they only, once they get into the head, and it's normally Republican, they somehow assume the Republicans are going to be better for Israel, and that's it. Nothing else matters. I said, I could talk to them blue in the face, and I have no effect on them whatsoever. That's it. That's their issue. And what can you do?
I mean, I can't even, you know, sometimes I try to even imagine what that would be like. First of all, I'm a Gemini, so just picking one of anything would make my head explode. But to be that, to make life so simple, you just pick one issue, make it black and white, find the person that is white enough on the idea for you or black enough on the idea for you, however you look at that, and say, that's how I'm going to vote and that's how I'm going to base every one of my life decisions. You know,
might as well be a robot.
Yeah, but can you imagine the freedom? I mean, then maybe I could, like, find a cure for cancer because I wouldn't be so absorbed in this issue.
If you're like that, that means you're not a thinker. So you're not going to be able to create anything else of any value. I really believe that.
Thank you. That will help me sleep tonight. I'll still wake up angry tomorrow morning, but I'll sleep tonight.
Then my job here is done. What do you think of this election? You know, apparently, McCain isn't a Republican because I swear to God, they're acting like they're a brand new party running against the people in charge who are obviously from some other party I never heard of. This is amazing. They have nothing to do with Bush. They don't mention his name at all in the convention. And the person, someone who's been in the Senate, 30, 35 years, he is going to bring change. It's really quite remarkable. And people are calling
for it. One of the strangest, most surreal images for me last week was seeing Laura Bush on stage at the convention.
Uh-huh.
She looked like she was seasick, you know, standing on like some deck of a boat. You know, she looked nauseous. She looked uncomfortable. She looked unsure of what to say. It was worse than deer in headlights. She just looked like, I mean, she was saying, "We can do change. We can do better." I mean, she was saying that about her own husband's. I mean, it was just very bizarre.
It is very. It's strange. It's absolutely strange. You're right. I'm surprised she showed up.
Well, I felt like there were people with guns behind the curtain or something, and I wasn't sure if they were there to keep her on the stage or have her get off the stage. I mean, I became very anxious watching it because I thought this was very unnatural and forced, and I didn't know who to feel sorry or for. You know what I mean? It was like it was just a horrible position for anyone to be in.
Well, you know,
I mean, the first lady ratting on your husband's administration, trying to get a new candidate elected, I mean, it was just, wow.
And basically saying everything you did was terrible and we're going to pretend you don't belong to the same party we belong to. But, well, you know, it's kind of interesting. Well, you know what it is even though everybody's pretending that they never met Bush before and they have nothing to do with him, basically, it's in Bush's interest for a Republican to win anyway, because he knows damn well if there's a Democratic Congress and a Democratic president, that there are going to be more investigations. But if he's followed by McCain, then all the dirt will be permanently buried. And so he has an incentive to cooperate even while they're basically insulting him. Not that he doesn't deserve it, but, I mean, he has a major incentive to make sure
as I said, poor Laura standing up there, you know, just like, this is horrible to have to say, but I have to do it to save him. It's like the, you know, cut my child in half, King Solomon or whatever, because I'm trying to make everybody happy. It was very uncomfortable. We on XXBN on November 4th, you know, I believe you might have heard of that date.
I'm going to have a nervous breakdown before that date comes, I swear. The way things are looking so scary, I don't know how I'm going to survive it.
Well, we're having what we're calling a two-hour election night coverage here on XXBN. I believe it's from 10 to midnight on East Coast time. We'll have to double-check. You can always check information at the XXBN blog. And I'd love to have you come on if you can stomach it and if you make it till then. We're going to have Nina Hartley on and several other guests discussing as things come in, with, you know, whether it's state and local people are interested in, all the way up to the big election and discussing what we think is happening and what we think this means. So you're more than welcome to come and join us that night if you make it till then.
Okay, that sounds like fun, I think. Well, it depends on what's happening. I may be like somewhere shooting myself, but assuming I haven't slipped my wrist by then, it sounds like it would be fun.
See, I've committed to the show for November 4th because I know I'll still have plenty of time to pack and move to Canada should the worst happen. Being in Fargo, I don't have that far to go, and it's going to take at least a month for that horrible thing to actually happen. So I figure I can be available for the 4th, but after that, I might be busy packing. And I joke about it, but at the same time, I go, I don't really know if I can stand 4 more years.
I was joking about the same thing to my husband. Like, if McCain is, you know, steals this election, what country do you want to move to? And I was only half joking. I mean, I live in New York City. I love New York City. I really would hate to leave. Maybe we should just secede instead. If Palin can support Alaskan's secession and still run for president, vice president, then I don't know why I can't support New York City's secession. But Obama's the one who's not the patriot, right?
Yeah, right.
I love it. You gotta love it.
She was certainly not vetted very well as a candidate, because stuff just keeps popping up on her that you think that the Republican Party would have wanted to steer clear of.
You would think so. You would think so. On the other hand, you know, once Obama didn't name Hillary, they had this opening. And first of all, he was getting tremendous pressure to name an extreme right winger to make the conservatives, religious conservatives, happy. And I don't know who else there was that they would have found acceptable. So I don't know. I think they figured they would bully their way and lie their way through it like they do everything else. I mean, the Bush administration has been a perfect example. They've been lying through their teeth for almost 8 years, and they've gotten away with it. And McCain figures they can do the same thing. I mean, every day those two get on the stump and they lie about whether they're talking about the thanks but no thanks to the Bridge for Nowhere, which is a lie, and every single newspaper has portrayed it as a lie and is still saying it. You know, no matter what they're talking about. So I think they figured that the fact that she had problems in the history, they'd lie about it, wouldn't matter anyway.
Did you hear about the rape kits?
Yes, I did hear about that. Charging, they had to pass legislation because the town she was mayor of, the police were doing that.
Apparently there was a chance for funding to come through so that the government, the principalities, would pay for the rape kits.
Yes.
And her city or location was not only the only one that refused to do so that the victims would have to pay, what was it, like hundreds of dollars?
Hey, they're required to keep the kids, so why should they pay for the rape kit too? I mean, that's the attitude. What an outrageous! I mean, not to have an exception, an abortion exception when someone's rape or incest. I mean, you know. So
now you're going to be denied criminal prosecution and justice because you don't have the money for a rape kit.
Exactly.
I was just handed this in. I feel like I need that last lesson. Beep 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 beep. I was just handed this in. We can read the article about the Sarah Palin and the rape kit issue at cadenhead.org. That's cadenhead.org. What astonishes me about this is that, you know, I don't mean to be stereotypical about this little town that she was mayor of, but I'm just going to go off of what I know in general in the United States: smaller towns, lower cost of living, lower wages. I can't imagine what $700 for a rape kit would mean you have to choose between in your household.
Absolutely.
I mean, come up with $700 one month, it'd be like, well, gee, I guess I won't pay rent for 3 months or food for two months because I gotta go and get me some justice. And I pro-choice and pro-life, people can be bitterly divided on that. But how can you, for a second, not see that rape should be prosecuted and that it's not the victim should not have to pay for that? That is part of police investigation work. That's a pretty clear issue for me for women. I mean, you can be, there's lots of women who are pro-life, and that's a big issue for them. But how can you not see that something like this is clearly anti-woman?
Absolutely. And for that alone, all women should vote against her. That would be sufficient. That would be sufficient, absolutely.
Dads and mothers and husbands, this could be your daughter that would end up having to pay $700 for a rape kit.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't think of anything more cold-hearted and with no rational basis at all. I mean, no. It says a lot about the kind of human being that she is and that she isn't.
And she and her district or whatever were the only ones against this.
Huh?
So it's not like there was some fat tied to this that was abhorrent. This is clearly women are not a priority. Their health don't matter.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right. It is horrifying. But meanwhile, Barack Obama is being accused of being sexist because of that lipstick on a pig remark. Did you follow that whole thing?
No, I heard part of it, but you know, I don't even. I just sort of disconnected from reading a lot of the stuff. The Sarah Palin thing sort of was actually a conversation we had tonight over dinner. As a matter of fact, I have tried to stay out of it because I get so angry and so upset. But he made a lipstick on a pig comment,
that's one of the standard colloquial expressions people use,
to
say, you know, Exactly. And he's used it in any number of cases. And McCain actually used it in reference once to Hillary, actually. But all of a sudden, so he used it the other day, and next thing you know, he's being accused of calling Sarah Palin a pig. And that's all you hear about in the news, is that Obama's being accused of being sexist, and he called, and according to McCain's people, he called Sarah Palin a pig. I mean, it's unbelievable. They make up these issues, they lie, and they do anything, and they distract. The whole point is to distract the media, because if the media is distracted with nonsense, then they don't talk about the issues, because if anyone gets informed about the issues and they know they know the difference between the positions of Obama and the positions of McCain Palin, and they know about all the lies, then maybe they actually might vote for someone who will be good for this country. But so the whole point is distract, and get the media talking about things that have nothing to do with anything. And every day that this happens and the media is not covering real issues, that's another day that McCain's points go up. It's sickening. It's absolutely sickening, and they're getting away with it. They're getting away with it, and that's why I'm so worried about this election.
Yeah, I don't know. You've heard of the Pumas, right, or whatever they're called, the diehard
yes.
Hillary supporters,
yes.
And there's some question. I don't know much about them, but apparently the media rumor is that they exist. They're in big numbers, and that they're willing to vote for McCain to send a lesson to the Democratic Party, to cut off their noses to spite their faces,
yes.
Which
I
can't see happening.
You know what, I think there are some, but I think it's a very small amount of people. I think there's a very small group of them, but the media likes to have stories. They have to come up with conflict and stories, and there's nothing better than talking about a conflict between Hillary and Obama, and if there isn't one, they'll make it up. So it's a minuscule issue. There are a handful of people that feel that way, believe me.
I think the
media likes to do this, though. That's fun for them.
Well, I think that, you want to send a message to the Democratic Party. You don't do so at the expense of four more years. And anyone that was a Hillary supporter certainly isn't going to find anything redemptive in John McCain, and certainly not in Sarah Palin. That's the one thing where I go, this whole Sarah Palin thing may actually have woken up a lot of other people. You know what I mean? To saying, I'm not so ambiguous anymore. I'm not really sure, because this should be, not letting making victims buy their own rape kits really sends a message to me. That's pretty black and white.
I think most women who are informed about her history, her positions, and her lives will vote for Obama. The problem is getting them informed and cutting through all the nonsense that all you read about, all the crazy, every day there's another crazy thing that you're reading about instead of issues. Because the media, it's too much work to uncover, stuff that hasn't been revealed yet. It's too much work to talk about substance. It's much more fun for the media to talk about nonsense. So what I'm worried about is the American public won't be sufficiently informed. I'm looking forward to the interview that she's doing later this week. I just hope she gets asked some hard questions. I'm worried that the network made a deal and promised to go easy on her, and that's how he got the interview. And let's hope we have a real serious interview and not one of these easy affairs where there's no follow-up questions. Because I really think if women do hear what she's about,
men who have wives and sisters and daughters and don't want those women they love to be treated in that fashion either. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily all it's a gender issue, but I don't think it only affects, intelligent men will realize that this could affect their daughter. They're going to care.
Oh, that's true, too. The only reason I was talking about women is because we were talking about the Pumas, that's all. Absolutely. Sure. Well, I mean, my husband's having as big a nervous breakdown of the election as I am. I mean, he's absolutely horrified by what's going on. He hates Bush and McCain and Palin as much as I do. So obviously, it's certainly not just women. But
I know. I wasn't attacking you.
No. I didn't think you were. I just want to make sure I was being clear. But I just hope the information gets out there.
Through your blog and lots of other bloggers out there making some noise, I'm you know, hopefully, like you said, we can change a few minds or educate a few people to some things that are missing from the main spray of news. It's one of the things we try to do here. Our time has been up for a little while yet, not that we're in trouble or anything, but I wanted to mention that you know, you're more than welcome to come on November 4th. I will email you some details on that if you want to come for election night. And anyone listening, you are invited to attend. It will probably be loud. It'll probably be either that or we'll all be slack-jawed and crying. But either way, there should be something to talk about.
Sounds like fun.
And I wanted to mention again the name of your website again. Again, people can go to cultofgracie.com or xxbnradio.blogspot.com to find out links. But if they want to just find you directly, why don't you tell us your website name?
It's madkane.com. M for Madeline. MADKANE.com.
And from there they can find the regular humor writings, the political writings, and some.
Computer humor, money, everything.
Yeah, and making fun of lawyers, always a good thing. My
sister's
corporate attorney, so I'll send her there for comments to me, though. It's kind of funny.
No, you can find humor about just about anything. If you're particularly interested in politics, just click on the Political Madness blog. But there's humor for just about every taste there. I'd like to say it all, undo immodesty. Anyway, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Well, it's been great. I'd love to have you back on, and hopefully we can work it out on election night. Your husband can join us, too. That's fine. He can rant. But if not, we'll schedule something else later on, maybe at the beginning of next year, if we both make it that long.
That sounds like a deal. I'd love to do it.
Then again, via Blog Talk Radio, we could probably broadcast from Canada. That would work, too. Just all hooked up to the Internet. So thanks very much for being on, and I want to say thank you to everybody listening to Cult of Gracie Radio on XXBN, broadcasting via Blog Talk Radio. XXBN operates out of Raleigh, North Carolina, and Cult of Gracie takes place, I guess, here with me in my butt sitting here in Fargo, North Dakota. And Madeline Kane is in New York, and she's willing to succeed.
But will I succeed in succeeding? That's the question.
Dun, dun, dun. See, I need some sound effects, like great soap opera music. Tune in and find out. Tune in November 4th and find out. Oh, gosh. Well, thanks so much for being here. I will catch up with you in email.
It's been fun. Thank you for having me. I look forward to it, and I look forward to November 4th.
All right, excellent. Thank you, and good night from Call to Gracie Radio.
Good night. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.